Hello and welcome back to the Introless BenHeck.com podcast. I'm your Introless host, Ben Heckendorn.
I'm Jason Jones. I also don't have an intro, apparently.
I just can't think of any lately.
That's fine.
We got to do one for Christmas, of course.
Well, sure.
Although I don't know what's really left for Christmas. I mean, we've done every Christmas story there is, except for Christmas.
Is there any way we can crap that overrated piece of trash into some sort of intro?
I don't know. Well, we did the Christmas Carol.
We did It's a Wonderful Half-Life, of course.
Yes.
And did the... What was the other... Was it Grinch or Scrooge or what the hell was...
How Jack Thompson stole Christmas.
Yeah, that one. That one was
that
a good one.
That one was good. Yeah. I don't know. You, the listeners, do you have any suggestions for a Christmas intro? Send them to us at my email address. It seems like I had a good idea for a Mario. Oh, I think I thought about doing a Mario Cop, like, 24.
Yeah, we gotta have another Mario Cop. I mean, it's...
We should try to squeeze one out before Christmas.
Yeah, because it's been too long. I'm sure people are wondering what he's up to.
What was the last one? Was it the one where he was racing cars?
I think it was, because we did the Dr. Mario was the first, like, offshoot where we didn't just do the straight cop thing, and then we had the Mario Kart thing, and...
Maybe Mario could fight swine flu. I was thinking about being a pig with a thermometer for Halloween.
Nice.
I could be an imaginary character.
Yes.
So maybe we'll make an intro. But yeah, if anyone has any suggestions for like a Christmas-themed intro, let us know. I mean, what else happens at Christmas? I mean, you know, It's a Wonderful Life doesn't even have anything to do with Christmas.
Well, we haven't done the, like, a Christmas Carol type thing, like with the Scrooge type shit.
Yeah, we did. Remember the video Pirates Save Christmas? That was a Christmas Carol.
Oh, crap.
Remember,
yeah, we did.
It was like, you were the guy, then your boss was
evil.
Yeah,
that's right.
And then he was showing the error of his ways.
God, how have we done this many of these? We haven't been doing this for that many Christmases,
have we?
That's
three Christmases, isn't it? Three Christmases, that sounds like a...
Well, we had the Jack Thompson, we had that one, we had Half-Life, and then we also had...
No, that's it. 2006, 2007, 2008. Three Christmas episodes.
Oh, okay.
I'm quite sure.
Very well.
Gosh, what... Okay, there's a Charlie Brown Christmas where he gets that crappy tree and then they fix it, right? Rudolph, that's another Christmas classic.
Yeah, Rudolph, yeah.
Now, Rudolph is the one with Embalmable Snowman, right? Where there's, like, dentist?
I believe so.
Okay, that could work. God, what else happens? There's, like, well, it was, like, Rankin Bass. Is that the people that made all the stop-motion ones?
I think something like that. But
there was one where, like, Santa Claus Began. It was basically Santa Claus Begins.
Yeah, I remember that one.
I think that's the one that is played during Batman and Robin. Remember where he's like, sing, sing!
I try to forget.
What else happens at Christmas? Oh, you know what we could do, finally?
Die Hard?
No, Mel Gibson's The Nativity Story.
Oh, God, yes. That one
okay,
would be awesome. Because we already have that one kind of fleshed out, so...
Yeah, because that was the first Christmas.
Are we going to have the line in it, though?
Of course!
Good.
As the years go by, I don't care about the podcast anymore. I mean, I don't...
Good.
So, to explain to everyone, Mel Gibson's...
You just gotta let him experience
it.
Okay. Let's not ruin it.
Right. But the idea came when we were all in line for Casino Royale, and there was a poster for the Nativity Story.
Yep.
This is a couple years ago, obviously. So then we all started, like, pretending to be King Herod and shit.
Yeah.
And we're like, wow, this is like Mel Gibson's Nativity Story.
Jesus'
birth is as violent as his death.
Well, and it was like, you know, shit, if Mel Gibson were making that movie, people would actually go and see it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's it then.
Yeah.
You have to be King Herod, of course.
I can pull that off. I will look forward to that.
we should get Mary to be Mary.
That would be appropriate.
Yeah, because her name is Mary.
Yes. What other qualifications do you need?
Oh, Dale should be like some evil innkeeper or something.
Well, of course.
and I will be an ox. Oh, the wise men have to do shit in it, too.
Yeah, they do.
Follow that star!
It's gonna be so awesome.
We should just fucking go for it.
Oh, yeah.
It's nothing against Christmas or Jesus.
Oh, no.
It's more against Hollywood.
Yes.
Okay, let's move on .org. Okay, so our topics today, they're not all about violent Mel Gibson Christmas movies. Gold, frankincense, and murder. Okay, anyway, our topics today are the 3D rage in movies. It was just for a while that they were making nothing but remakes, but now everything's also in 3D. When will it end? Or did you see the new trailer for Avatar?
Mm-mm.
Dances with Wolves in Space.
So it just solidified that opinion, apparently.
Well, actually, Battle for Terra.
Yeah.
It's pretty much Battle for Terra.
Okay.
Like, exactly. It's pretty much the same movie.
Nice.
Okay. Topic two. New releases coming with downloadable content codes to combat used game sales? It seems to be the new rage.
Yes.
We shall discuss. Next. Console versus PC online. Now, what has prompted this topic was, of course, the Modern Warfare 2 thing. Now, while I obviously did a project for Modern Warfare 2 people, I'm not going to be too harsh on it, but I think it's a good time to talk about the differences between PC and console online. And I think, from my experience, the PC people, how do I put this?
Are snobs.
Well, snobs, and they think things about console online, but they're not entirely correct.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of their points are valid, so I think we should talk about that, too. And Steam, I actually think, you know, if they're going to, like, put these limitations in Modern Warfare 2, the fact that it's on Steam puts a lot back into it.
Yeah.
And then finally, Netflix is coming to the PlayStation 3. We discuss. Oh, I got some hot sauce from Billy Mitchell, the King of Kong. Well, actually, he's not the King of Kong. Because in the King of Kong, he's dethroned as the King.
Oh, no.
Of Kong.
I should watch that sometime.
It's
on
okay.
The Netflix streaming.
Yeah,
that's
how I watched it.
I just haven't gotten around to it.
I'd gotten to about the 9 billionth person asking me if I'd seen it. And then when I was in Miami, I met two people that are in that movie, and I'm like, you know, it's probably about time I watched this movie. So when I got back, I watched it. It's kind of cheap.
Okay.
It's not like a Michael Moore movie. I mean, it's definitely something kind of cheap, but
thank you for calling his stuff movies instead of a documentary. I actually watched a documentary the other day called Michael Moore Hates America. It was very interesting.
Apparently, in capitalism, Michael Moore found an airline pilot making $17,000 a year.
Really?
Apparently.
Well, it was interesting in this Michael Moore Hates America thing, because this guy, you know, he just kind of took the tact that he's like, you know, this Michael Moore guy, he keeps saying things are so bad, you know, and he's like, I became concerned. I'm like, is this really the case? And so he, like, went around, and he actually, like, interviews people from Moore's movies. And he's like, okay, you know, like, say your piece, or, you know, how did this really go down? Because there's the scene in Bowling for Columbine where he goes into the bank and walks out with the gun. And so this guy goes to the bank and actually interviews the people, and they're like, yeah, that was all staged, you know, and he didn't tell us what his movie was about or anything. He just said, you know, hey, I'm this filmmaker, I'm going to be in town, you know, can we arrange this stuff? And, you know, he totally manipulated it.
So it was a movie, not a documentary, basically?
Yeah. But it was just interesting, like, seeing that stuff and getting... And then he interviews, like, a Iraq War veteran who was in Moore's movie, and Moore was... Or this guy was like, I never authorized myself, like, being in his movie. You know, he's like, I was totally manipulated, you know, like, the way I'm depicted in the movie and stuff like that. And so he, you know, gets to say his piece in this other guy's, you know, flick or whatever, and... I mean, it's, you know, everybody's got an agenda and whatever, but I thought it was kind of neat to see these people, you know, and let them kind of have their say in it. Because, I mean, it's obvious Moore has an agenda in everything he does, and...
I think it's ironic that he makes movies to make money, yet he makes one ripping on capitalism.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure he didn't mind all the capital that he made off Fahrenheit 9/11.
Yeah. Well, and throughout this whole other movie this guy did, like, through the whole movie, he's trying to get a hold of Michael Moore, like, to interview him. And Moore keeps, you know, like, pretty much blowing him off, and he never gets to interview him. And it's kind of an interesting parallel, because Michael Moore's first documentary he did was Roger and Me, where he was trying to hunt down the head of General Motors and, you know, to say, why'd you close this plant in Flint? You know, look what's going on, blah, 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 and he keeps getting blown off. And it's like, wow, 20 years later, you know, the roles have kind of been reversed.
All good things eventually turn evil.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting, but... Not that that has anything to do with anything we're talking about, but...
Well, no, I was talking to Walter Day, who is in King of Kong, and he's the head of the Twin Galaxies scorekeeping people. Oh, apparently I'm in the Guinness Book of World Records Gamers Edition now.
Really?
Yeah, someone told me that yesterday. I should go look at it at the bookstore.
For what? Just, like, your modding and things?
I think it was, like, prolific modding or something. I don't know exactly, but I talked to them a year ago, but apparently it's out now. Anyway... So they deal with the Twin Galaxies. So the guy in the movie who was like the scorekeeper guy, he's like, well, there's a part at the end where there's like this guy who's trying to beat Billy Mitchell's score. Like, so basically the underdog, right?
Yeah.
And he's sitting there playing this game, and then Billy Mitchell finally shows up, and he's walking past him, and they do a cut, and they cut to Billy Mitchell having walked past him, make it look like he completely ignored the guy.
Yeah.
And Walter Day's like, that's not how it happened at all. I mean, in reality, he actually talked to him, but they edited it in such a way to make Billy Mitchell look like a villain.
Yeah.
And
they talked about that in this documentary too. Like, he actually interviews this guy who's a very well-regarded like documentarian and stuff, and he was like talking about how Michael Moore is very like masterful with how he edits things. Like, he talked about in Bowling for Columbine, where they use the speech that Charlton Heston gave like about a week after Columbine happened, and they were actually in like the Columbine area for this NRA rally, which had been scheduled like long before. And there's actually, they explain like why that happened and stuff, because it's actually in like something with the laws and whatever that they have to give so far in advance notice to cancel a meeting, and it was too close to that
it was
time.
Too late.
Yeah, it was too late, so they had to go forward with it. And when Heston gives a speech, they show, like, the uncut speech in this thing, and it's much different from how it's shown in Moore's movie. They just show Heston, you know, say, like, we're already here, and he holds up a gun, you know, and stuff like that, and it's, like, totally manipulated, and he, you know, he talks about with editing, you know, he cuts from, like, the very first thing Heston says to the crowd, and then cuts back to Heston to make it look like it's just one seamless thing, but
B-roll.
Actually, yep.
So
but actually,
edited,
there's
it's
like
an edited movie.
Yeah, but actually, there's like, you know, 5 minutes of his speech in between there that's just like gone.
It's like when they make a movie trailer and they take out the boring shit and just basically give you the talking points that.
Yep.
Well, like in movie trailers, like there'll be lines that aren't even in the movie, but like certain things the character might say.
Yeah.
Sums up the point better, but it doesn't work in the movie, but basically out of context. So.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, so this is kind of neat, though, to see that, like, dissected and...
So, the Michael Moore Hates America, what is the premise? I mean, it's not just that Michael Moore hates America, right? It's basically that...
Yeah, it's just kind of like...
He's not really a documentarian, he's more of a movie maker.
Yeah, it's basically kind of getting to the heart of that, you know, he's... You know, he operates under the guise of being a documentarian, but really he's just making movies that serve his points and... You know, and his purpose, and they talk about how basically when anybody calls him out on anything, he just, like, talks them down and just, like, dismisses them. Like, anytime somebody tries to rattle his cage, he just can't take it. He's just got, like, this ridiculously huge ego and, you know, thinks the world revolves around him and whatever, and...
Well, he's chubby enough. I mean,
yeah.
Conceivable
he might have
gravity.
His own gravitational field. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean... It's well, not a perfect movie. It's obviously, you know, pretty low budget and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, this guy just made it on his own dime and, you know, whatever.
That's kind of how King of Kong looks, basically a camcorder or whatever.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's, like, shots where stuff's, like, out of focus and things every now and then, you know. And
oh, speaking of Michael Moore, I have this new thing to do. I annotate SkyMall magazines now. So I went through and I, like, put my comments on all the things in SkyMall. Oh, shit! Oh, I still have it. grab my bag. There's a SkyMall in there. You would not believe this fucking product in SkyMall. I just laughed for like 5 minutes. Oh, yeah, here it is. No, seriously, you will not fucking believe this.
So,
but anyway, you go here it is. You go through SkyMall and you annotate things like comments.
Yeah.
One of them was like a spy pen with like a camera in it. And it shows like two people in a boardroom shaking hands, like, take video of anything. And I wrote, I love this thing, Michael Moore. Look at this. You look at that right there. Read it aloud.
Oh, God.
Read the header.
New UWCP underwater cellular phone system. Have you ever wanted to make or receive a phone call underwater? Talk with someone 15,000 miles away while diving a tropical reef or in your pool. Oh, wait, that was supposed to be a question. Never mind. This complete and sophisticated diving communication system can do it. To use the UWCP system, simply connect your own cell phone with voice dialing and Bluetooth features via the provided waterproof interface box. Unit includes full face mask with hose and first stage, underwater communication kit, 40-meter cable with waterproof connector.
That's that part, stupid.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
And then waterproof interface box for cell phone with integrated Bluetooth and an inflatable buoy with flags.
Here, hold on. I got to take a picture of that. People won't believe that it's real unless they see it. Okay, hold on. Okay, that's going to be the podcast.
There it is. Picture. For real.
Isn't that the stupidest thing ever?
My God, it's $1,800.
Oh, shit, I didn't even read that part.
Yeah.
$1,800 for a wire?
Yep.
God, I don't even charge that much.
And the cellular phone is not included.
You know what else is dumb? The back of every SkyMall is an ad for Rosetta Stone, but it's not Tits McGee.
Well, how do they expect to sell this shit?
I know!
That's like when I went through the mall again the other day. It's like there's some, you know, middle-aged schlub there. You know, and I'm like, you're not Tits McGee. I'm not buying what you're selling, but whatever.
You know, I've read a lot of SkyMalls, but that is by far the stupidest item I've ever seen.
They have easy gear for Wii.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit, did I send you that link of that guy that breaks the LCD on the Home Shopping Network?
No.
Home Shopping Network is selling a Wii with a bunch of plastic shit to attach to it.
Oh, and he's, like, demoing it or something?
Yeah, he's demoing
there.
He's like, check it out! And so he puts on this plastic tennis racket, and he's like, you can adjust your motions, and his first swing, he hits the LCD and breaks it. On live Home
nice.
Shopping Network.
Nice!
I'm sure the phone lines are like, terrible.
Wow.
Well, we better move on, .org. There, I said that because of Michael Moore. Excuse me.
Well, this woman in this picture definitely looks like she needs an underwater cellular phone system.
Oh,
so.
I annotated that one. I put, the guy was saying, honey, I'm calling you from underwater. And then she says, I want a divorce.
She's like, stay there.
Die. Oh, SkyMall. I almost forgot I got that. The greatest crappy catalog ever.
Pretty much.
All right. So, let's move on. Okay, so...
Well, they got a projector phone here, too.
Oh, I doubt that works. I'm sure the battery lasts, like, what, 3 minutes?
Probably.
So we could just do a whole episode about SkyMall if we
yeah,
really wanted.
Yeah, just leaf through one.
One of my favorite flights, there was a British guy who had a really good sense of humor, and, like, we spent the entire flight, like, going through SkyMall and ripping on it. It was like Mystery Science SkyMall 3000.
Nice.
So dumb. Oh, and then this one picture in SkyMall? Here.
Did they have, like, a faux Oscar in there or something?
I think it's, like, a chocolate Oscar,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh. What?
I was like, oh, Jim Carrey probably loves that. He can actually get an Oscar that way.
But he's in A Christmas Carol.
Fuck that movie.
Yeah, whatever. Read that later. Speaking of Christmas Carol, apparently there's a 3D rage in movies these days.
Ugh.
Everything's in 3D. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't care for it personally. I think it's, well, it is a gimmick. I think even the film studios would probably admit as much.
Well, we all went and saw Toy Story, the double feature thing.
Yeah.
After the first 5 or 10 minutes, you don't even notice or care anymore.
Yeah. My main justification for that was just I never saw those movies in the theater originally, so I thought,
you
what
heathen.
The hell, I'll go and see them now, but... I still don't think they're particularly amazing. I think they're, you know, not anywhere near the top of the food chain as far as Pixar movies
are
concerned.
Oh, so it's not just me then?
No.
Toy Story 2 really drags in some spots.
Yeah, I would agree.
Oh, good. God, I thought I was the only person on the planet that thought
that. No, especially watching them again, I'm like, well, these are fine, but they're nothing special.
See, Toy Story 2 started out as a direct-to-video movie, and very late, and it was like supposed to be really short, like an hour and 10 minutes.
Okay.
And late in the development, Disney's like, "This, we could make this into a whole movie, so add some shit and re-render it at movie resolutions," right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff that's just filler, like the tour guide Barbie stuff. It has nothing to do with the plot. I've always thought that movie's really overrated, so I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Yes. But yeah, as far as 3D, it's... I mean, pretty much any animated movie that comes out now is 3D, or there's a 3D version anyway. And it's like, is this really necessary? But I don't know. For me, I like stuff like Fish 3D, Space Station 3D. You know, it's like, well, it's like more like documentary stuff,
and
it's like real
world.
Yeah, it's like a real place that you're probably never going to go to, but it allows you to experience it, which is cool.
Right, like in space 3D, there's like peanut M&Ms floating through the air.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel like you're in space because the feeling is there. Like the awesome shot where they shot down in the space shuttle and you can see like the periphery of the Earth on either side of the IMAX. That's what 3D's for. Or Beowulf.
Yeah.
Beowulf wasn't that good of a movie, but in 3D it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was badass, especially that end fight with the dragon and stuff. That's like the one exception for me, like for, you know, movies that were 3D. I think Beowulf, it definitely improved the experience, enhanced it or whatever, where so, everything else, it's like, yeah.
Maybe Christmas Carol. I mean, look, think about Zemeckis. At least he, like, throws the 3D in your face.
Yeah, true.
I mean, you know, Pixar is pretty subtle with it. Like, Up, I saw that in 3D. And, you know, I noticed, you know, it was a really good movie more so than it was in 3D. Because, really, you spend your whole life in 3D. I mean, you really don't notice it that much.
Yeah. Yeah, and Zemeckis is, you know, like a top-tier filmmaker. And he's always kind of on the bleeding edge of technology. So, I would agree. He'll probably, you know, do well with it, but
I'm not going to rush out.
I don't really care. But I mean, I've seen A Christmas Carol told I don't know how many times, how many different ways.
Yeah, how long has it been in the public domain? Like pretty much since the dawn of the movies.
Pretty
it's
much.
An old story.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, and then like Avatar or Avaturd, whatever the hell it is anymore.
Dance with Wolves in Space.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to go see it, but it's like,
so you're not going to say that you're not like Dale?
No. I mean, I'm going to go see it just because it's Cameron, and I've never seen a bad Cameron movie. I mean, I've seen movies from him that I, you know, just like, I'm like, yeah, that was fine. You know, but I've never seen anything where I'm like, yeah, that was a hunk of shit. Or even Spielberg, who I think is a better filmmaker, has
certainly
made...
more prolific.
Yeah, he makes way more movies, for one thing, but he has had a few turds mixed in there.
Right, if Cameron were to make, like, I don't know, 18 movies or however many Spielberg's made, I'm sure he'd have cranked out a Indiana Jones 4 or a 1943...
Yeah, Spielberg's probably...
41, I'm sorry.
Probably just since Cameron last did an actual theatrical release, Spielberg's probably done at least 10 movies in that time span.
Well, let's think. Saving Private Ryan, AI, Minority Report, Catch Me If You Can, Terminal,
Crystal
Jones
Skull,
4,
War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds. Yeah,
Munich.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And most of those are good movies.
Yeah, definitely. So.
Yeah, I don't... Well... Yeah, so the new Avatar trailer, I think I saw it yesterday, and it is basically like that Battle for Terra movie. They go to this planet, there's like an indigenous tribe sitting on a rich deposit of some shit they need to dig up.
Okay.
So, of course, it's winged creatures and bows and arrows. They even say that in the movie, bows and arrows fighting, you know, mechanized shit. And the Ewoks are cute when you're 8, or whatever age you were when you saw that movie.
Hey, the Ewoks are still cool.
Again, I'll go see it, but I am not expecting. I'm not expecting it to be better than any. I'm expecting it to be his worst movie. It'll probably.
I would expect that too. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, I kind of hope it does fail, just because I hope maybe that'll be a bit of a kick in the nuts to 3D. You know, but, I mean, the thing is, I don't fault the studios at all for pushing 3D, because, I mean, you look at box office receipts each week, and a lot of it's being driven by the 3D showings.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you see, like, you know, Ice Age, Monsters vs. Aliens, that Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs or whatever. I mean, all of these movies are making money, and a lot of it's because of the 3D.
Oh, yeah, Ice Age is, like, the third highest foreign gross of any movie ever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's insane.
Just crazy. They said one of the big keys with that movie is, I guess, when they localize it, they actually use, like, local stars for the audio. Mm. Where most movies, you know, they just have some Joe Blow German guy or Joe Blow Indian guy, like, do the dialogue. But I guess for that movie,
they get their own Ray Romano.
Yeah, there you go.
Ray Romano.
But yeah, they go and, you know, get, like, stars in those countries to do the voiceover work, and that's a big part of the success, I guess. So.
Hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know.
Do you think it's a fad, or do you think it's here to stay? 3D, not Ice Age.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's here to stay, at least for quite some time until they come up with something else. The thing I don't get is there's, like, this push to bring it into people's homes already,
yeah,
which I don't get, because it's like, you'd think the studios would be all against that, because the big reason to push it is to get people to go to the damn theater to see a movie.
Well, the thing is, the studios aren't the one. I mean, it's like, aside from Sony, and I bet you Sony isn't making a home system like that. Well, no, actually they are. Well,
they are.
PlayStation's got 3D, right?
Yeah.
That's coming. See, that's cool. 3D for games, I can see that.
Yeah, that could be cool.
It makes sense. It's part of the experience, but yeah, you'd think that the studios get pissed when, like, a movie like, not the theaters get mad, like G.I. Joe, I think, is pissing them off because it's coming out, like, just under 3 months.
Yeah,
on
that
DVD.
Thing's coming out, like, lightning fast.
And Sony wants to release the Michael Jackson movie for Christmas on DVD. And
wow.
So that kind of stuff pisses off theaters. So, yeah, you'd think they wouldn't like being betrayed by this home stuff. But the thing is, this home stuff is going to be so fucking expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, $2 more for a ticket versus, like, a $3,000 TV. It's not even in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
Although, yeah,
it'll take time, you know, but eventually that stuff's going to come down in price.
Why can't you keep the glasses and get $1 off and then go back in?
That would make more sense. Because, like, those Real D glasses or whatever,
yeah,
they just, you can just throw those away, you can take them home with you, whatever, but, yeah,
right,
you go back in again, there's no benefit to you bringing your own. Like, you brought your own when we went to Toy Story, but, yeah, they didn't give you a rebate, you know, and
I'm sure, like, their value is, like, probably nil, maybe 50 cents.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a piece of plastic. Still.
But still, it's like, you know, everybody wants to be green and
people
shit.
People don't want to be green. The media wants to push green.
I know, but you know what I'm saying.
I think they should. Well, you know how I am. I actively say I do not care about the environment, but I don't think that means that you shouldn't try to conserve things.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you should just be wasteful either. So.
Because, you know, you agree, you know, the planet will still be here long after we're all dead.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean you shouldn't try to save things, because you can save money by it and resources.
Well, it's like whenever I go to Best Buy and buy something, you know, they, like, always want to throw it in a bag, and I'm like, no, I don't need a bag. It's like, it's
right,
a DVD and a receipt. I think I can hold that in my hand and make my way out.
You probably don't go to Radio Shack. What the hell is wrong? I must have stuck my hands in some weird fluid or something. Radio Shack, every time you get a receipt from them, it's literally like a foot long.
That's how Circuit Cities always were. They were like, you know, half a foot wide and like a foot long.
Mm-hmm.
It's like kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. But no, they should. They should allow
you to bring
the glasses
back. That. I mean, why the hell not?
Because it would save them money. Like, even if they only give you 50 cents off a ticket, it's like, it would still, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Because if you can just take them, if you go to a Real D movie and take the movie glasses, you can, like, drive over them with your car in the parking lot.
Yeah.
That doesn't help anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they let you take them out of the theater, they have that much value. Basically, they have zero value. They're a liability to the theater. So if you bring them back, that should be an asset.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be... It's like when you get a new car battery, you have to bring it back because it gets recycled.
Yeah, and then you get like a few bucks credit or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, or like printer cartridges, all sorts of shit gets recycled. So why are people throwing away 3D glasses? Maybe I am an environmentalist.
Well, shit, people throw away iPods every year, so you know what the hell.
I was actually thinking about getting a new one, but I'm like, you know what? I can wait a little bit longer because I do have way more than 8 gigs of music, and it is kind of a pain to like because you have to actually think about what you put on it.
Yeah.
But I can wait. Oh, yeah. So, I'll tell you one thing about the 3D. That movie that had been talked about several times by us, the 1950 science fiction movie.
Yes.
I discussed it more with Ben Kellis than you guys, but... And it was going to be in 3D, because I remember those tests we did.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't want to do that now, because I'm sick of 3D. It's not cool anymore.
Yeah, it's like the end thing.
Right. So,
and it wouldn't mean anything either, because... Kind of the point of it was to be like a throwback to those 50s, you know, back when they were first doing 3D and, you know, that sort of stuff. And
right.
Kind of like how when you did Lizard of Death, like a similar type mm-hmm. thing. And that whole concept would pretty much be lost on most people, I think, now.
I was thinking, actually I just had this idea today, if I do make a second pinball machine, I'd probably just take that movie plot and make it into the machine.
Yeah,
so basically be like a 1950s science fiction themed pinball machine.
That'd be cool.
Because I've got all the ideas and stuff. And
yeah, might as well use them.
And make it kind of look like an old... Well, I know you're not a pinball aficionado, but before they were solid state, they were electromechanical. They basically were mechanical computers is how they worked. And make it look like an old machine. So basically make it retro, but of course it would be modern.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have like robots and bells and... Vacuum. This should be vacuum tubes on the board. Yes. So I might recycle. So since 3D has turned me off to it, I might recycle that idea into a pinball machine.
Nice.
So, okay, let's go on to our next topic. New releases. New release games often have a downloadable content code, which only works the first time. So basically, you have to buy it, and if you like it, you should have put a ring on it.
So I kind of think with this is that. They're doing it under the guise of we want to reward the people who buy our games new and also like combat piracy. But I think really they want to combat used game sales is what they're really after.
Used game sales are probably actually more of a problem than piracy.
I think so, but they're not going to come right out and say, you know, they're going after used game sales, I think. But I think, you know, they... do it more under the guise of, you know, like, rewarding their loyal customers, which is good, you should do that, but then also, you know, like, combating piracy, which this does as well, I would say.
Right.
But I think it's more about the used game sales.
Can I interrupt? Like, a lot of games also have, if you pre-order it, you get some shit, like the Beatles did, even though...
Forza 3 did that, also.
Army of Two, the 40th Day has that.
Dragon Age does.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's good, too, because, it adds value to the retail purchase.
Yeah, and also, the company likes that because they can sit there and be like, oh, okay, we've got X number of pre-orders already. You
right.
know, it gives them a good vibe about, you know, what they're doing, basically, and kind of helps them determine how many units they should, you know, put out there at launch.
That's true.
But yeah, like with, as examples of this... I just got Forza 3 last week, and there's two different editions of the game, but we'll just go with, like, the regular version that most people would buy. That comes with one card. It comes with one card in it, and the card basically lets you unlock a bunch of tracks from the first game, and it gives you 10 cars... I think it's 10 cars that you get that you can download. So basically, if you were to buy that game used, there's no way you could access those tracks, and there's no way you could access those 10 cars.
Some people might say that should have been in the game to begin with.
Yeah, and
I'm Larry King.
I hear that a lot, but I don't totally buy it. Because it's like, you know, you could say that about anything. It's like, you know, like with Rock Band Beatles, it's like, well... You know, they could have put Abbey Road and they could have put all this shit just right in the game. And it's like, well, yeah, they could have. But they have to do a value equation, and they sit down and they go...
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
That's right. But it's like, you know, they sit down and they're like, well, you know, here we can offer this and then add this on, you know, or whatever. And it's part of the value package. You know, they can use it as a marketing tool because it's like, well, here's the game, and then, hey, we're also giving you this extra shit for free.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't slate them for that. It's one thing if they bring out, like, a gimped game and do that, but it's like a game like Forza 3 is by no means gimped. I mean, if you don't get that shit, you're still going to have a great game that you can enjoy, and you might not even miss that stuff. You know, so it's, I think it's just kind of an additional thing. And I mean, if people want to use that, you know, stance, it's like, well, guess what? If you buy the game new, it is part of the game, basically. You're not paying anything extra for it.
Well, really, if anything, they're taking the value away from the used game.
Yeah, which is fine, because that's, I mean,
well, the thing is,
the
game companies do not make any money off the used game sales.
No, they don't make shit off of it. So I don't fault them at all for trying to find ways to get people to buy new.
And granted, GameStop's House of Cards will fall once they have all digital downloads, which is coming. It'll happen.
Yeah, it will.
But until, and it's not going to be for a while. I mean, it's not going to be the next console, for instance. It won't be. I mean, the next Xbox will have a Blu-ray player on it.
I wouldn't be surprised if the next Xbox, they give the option for a lot of games to download them digitally. I mean, the PS3 already does it for some games.
New games?
Yeah, like Warhawk they did that for, and like Gran Turismo Prologue. When they came out, they had digital versions that you could download.
Most of the stuff on the Xbox is older games.
I know, but
and
I'm saying...
the prices are like all over the map.
But Microsoft's big thing is always like digital downloads. Like their big thing, like their thing, you know, with people saying, well, what about Blu-ray? And they're like, doesn't matter, we're going to digital distribution. Like that's their big push. And they think that's the next thing, and I'm like, eh, you're full of shit.
Yeah,
but,
I downloaded a movie off Xbox, not look like a Blu-ray.
No. But that's their stance.
Not by a long shot.
You know, and so, but they're all about digital distribution. I mean, you can see that with a lot of things. They keep adding more and more stuff to the games on demand, and eventually it'll get to the point where I bet you there's new releases out there.
Do you think that could happen with this console yet, or do you think it'd be the next console?
I think it'd be the next console.
A lot of people say Natal is the next console, so we wouldn't be seeing a new Xbox for quite a while.
Yeah, I don't really buy that.
I think Natal is going to be a piece of shit.
I think it's going to be a big flop, yeah.
Can I interrupt? I found this site. You can download sounds for your pinball machines,
mm-hmm.
and they had all the sound effects from the Star Wars Episode 1 pinball, which was a Pinball 2000 machine.
Mm-hmm.
I should give you the link, because you could get, it's like this super clean audio sample. It's like, wipe them out, Viceroy.
Yes!
And Misa gonna die here! I thought of you when I came across that. And like, Misa discontinuity, Viceroy. That one was still fairly indistinguishable. Yeah, I know this wasn't our topic, but anyone who wanted motion shit already bought a Wii.
Yeah.
Anyone who wanted run around shooting terrorists already bought an Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
There's no crosstalk between those
yeah.
two. And anyone who cares, a lot of people have both consoles, so it's...
Yeah.
It's, who is it for?
Yeah, I don't know. It's...
And the guy who, like, pitches it, is this mirror, does he look exactly like George Michael?
A little bit, yeah.
And I know he has, like, some sort of eye condition, that's why he's got sunglasses on, but it does not change the fact that he looks like George Michael. He goes out there, he's like, I want you six, baby, Natal. Culture
yeah.
Club.
Yeah, I bet you Natal comes out next year. It doesn't do shit. The next Christmas, like Christmas 2011, there's a new Xbox.
Is Natal really that far away? It's not this Christmas.
No, it's gonna come. It's supposed to come out, I think, like mid next year.
Why does it take that long? You know, it's probably the software that mm-hmm. we're waiting for, not the system.
Well, yeah, they want to have some, and to their credit, it's like, you know, have some big ticket shit come out with it, you know,
yeah,
don't just crap the thing out and expect people to buy it with no software.
I read this stuff like Mark Rain, you know, my close personal friend, says, it's like, oh yeah, our future game's gonna have some Natal functionality built into it. It's like, I don't want to wave my arms around and kick things when I play Gears of War, I just want to push a button.
But then when you hear Cliff Bleszinski talk about it, he's like, well, I think there's some interesting things you could do about it, but... He's like, for stuff like Gears of War, he's like, I don't think it really fits. And, you know, that's two talking heads from the same company, so, you know,
Well, you like Fable. Knows? What about, you know, what's his face?
Peter
like,
Molyneux.
Yeah, he's
big he's all hard on Natal, which I'm a little concerned about with Fable 3, but we'll see.
Fable 3 or Fable Wii?
Well, like I've said before,
the Wii craze is already ending.
Yeah, even Nintendo is even saying that it's like the Wii's kind of taking a dump right now. You know, they
see we were right all along.
Yeah, it just took
we're
a little
like the
longer.
Ron Pauls of gaming.
It took a little longer to happen than we would have liked, but it definitely happened, and is continuing to do so. But my big thing with the Natal is just that it's, and I've said this before, but it's like if they bring it out for shit, and they want to put, you know, that sort of crap into like Gears of War and stuff, fine, but offer alternative controls for people that don't want to do that shit.
Like,
you know, make it work with the regular old 360 controller like 95% of people prefer.
And like we were talking about with Uncharted 2, I mean, Uncharted 1 had a couple stupid six-axis things built to it, and they fucking sucked.
Yep.
Second one, you're like,
and they jettisoned
gone.
It. Yep.
And you didn't even notice it, because it sucked.
Yep.
So yeah, Uncharted 1, I didn't even bother throwing grenades. It was so stupid.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Well, I see, like, that video, I mean, I guess people don't realize it online, but, you know, it seems like whenever any of us hang out, we always watch these dumb videos on the Xbox. Like, Lips is a classic video. But anyway,
Lips.
One of them is the, you know, it's like, oh, check out this stupid Natal video.
Yeah.
People. And, like, then the couple sitting there at night, and she's, like, moving her arm like this and pushing her thumb to, like, change the movies. She's like, you know what? Get a remote and push the buttons on it. It's the same fucking thing, and it'll work. It's like, who wants to sit there doing that shit? Do you think in Minority Report, do you think Tom Anderton wants to go home and put on his little finger gloves and, like, well, I guess he sort of goes home and watches videos.
You mean John Anderton?
Whatever his name is. Tom Anderton?
Tom Cruise Anderton, hero. The only thing I'd say...
The precogs, they can see the future, because I was in Judge Dredd.
What they need to do, though, in the next Xbox is put goddamn Bluetooth in it.
And heat sinks.
Well, sure. But that's one thing I hate, is, you know, they've got the great little controller, you know, for, like, you know, your remote for
you have to be like a fucking
stuff,
sniper to
and
make
you have
that
to be,
work.
Like... You know, going around your table and shit or whatever, you know. And
well, it's worse than an average remote. Average remotes, I mean, you can aim it at the ceiling.
Yeah.
You don't even have... As long as you're, like, within, like, 180 degrees of the IR sensor...
Yep, it'll work.
I think the problem with that is, you know, since I've taken apart one or two Xboxes in my life, you may have heard about this, is there's kind of, like, a light tube in it, which is, like, a molded piece of plastic, which...
Oh.
Normally, they'll use those for LEDs. Like, the LED, but down here... But there'll be a piece of plastic, and it'll shine into that, and it'll kind of go through the plastic and come out.
Okay.
That way, the indicator light doesn't have to necessarily be where the LED is. Anyway, the infrared sensor has one of those, too, where it kind of has to go through some extra shit.
Oh,
and a little more so than... The average piece of consumer electronics, there'll be, like, a bezel where the, you know, like... On like on a DVD player or stereo deck, you know, you've got this black piece of crap here that the display shines through. Well... Hidden behind that would be the infrared sensor, but it's pretty much right on the surface.
Okay.
Whereas the Xbox is kind of, there's like, it's kind of a ways back there, which is why you have to be so accurate with it. And it's lame.
Yeah. Because that does suck. That's one thing I do love about the PS3. It's Bluetooth. I can be like off in another room and hit the damn button and I can hear the thing turn on.
Yet, you still pointed at it in the general direction.
Yes. Actually, a lot of times when I go to sit down on the couch, as I'm sitting down, I'll just reach down and hit the button on it, and the remote's pointed whatever direction. And it's like, ah, that's so awesome that it just turns on.
That could be a whole topic, Xbox 720.
Yeah.
I have a suggestion for it. Air holes. Here's how it works. You draw up something, and then you draw little holes in the case. And the idea is air goes through it.
What?
Yeah. Oh, built-in Wi-Fi. It's
almost
unexcusable,
really. It's ridiculous. That is one of its glaring faults, I would say.
Oh, but now there's a new wireless N adapter that you can get, which means the G adapter will probably come down to the swelt price of $75 or something.
Yeah, I bet it'll be like $70.
Actually, I bet it would get discontinued, actually. But
yeah.
snap one up while you can. I've got that one laying in there I'm not using,
yeah.
But I'm not going to sell it on eBay because as soon as I sell it on eBay, I'll need it for something else.
Oh,
so
sure.
I'm just going to keep it for now. yeah, all right. Well, why don't we...
What do you think about this?
What?
With, you know, packaging, that is it going to do anything? I personally don't think it'll do a whole hell of a lot because the average gamer doesn't give a shit. But
anyone who goes to GameStop is trying to save money, not trying to get shit. And GameStop is kind of like a soccer mom place. Oh, games, and I can stop there. This makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I'm Sarah Palin.
Thing is, it's not just GameSpot that gets these, or GameStop that gets these deals. So,
what do you mean?
Like that DLC for Dragon Age and like Forza, that was in every single copy, wherever you could go to Walmart and buy it. They actually had pre-order things like at Walmart and places like that where you'd get a special car if you pre-ordered it at Walmart.
Oh.
And, which they had that at GameStop also. It was actually a different car depending on where you pre-ordered at. And then like the Dragon Age thing, it's... that DLC comes with any copy of it that you buy. There's basically the stuff that's exclusive to certain locations is like the, you know, bonus thing you might get for pre-ordering, you know, like Dragon Age. I think you get like a freaking ring and a necklace or something that you can use in-game for probably the first three levels, and then it becomes useless, you know.
Right.
One of the exceptions to that is with Forza 3, they actually had a limited collector's edition, which is the one I bought. And it was $80, but it came with, like, a whole bunch of extra shit, and there's, like, five exclusive cars that the only way you can get them is in that VIP, like, collector's edition thing. Which was pretty much why I bought it, because the new Corvette ZR1 was in that, and I had to have that since it's the most awesome car in the world, so...
yeah, maybe you could talk about Forza 3 a little bit here, but first I just wanted to say... I mean, I think the game companies might as well add value to a retail purchase by doing those things. I guess the concern is, like, you know, will there come a point where they cut out entire portions of the game? Like,
yeah.
You know, like, you know how it used to be, like, on
slippery
the N64,
slope.
Like, if you didn't have the memory pack, there was, like, half the game you couldn't even play, pretty much, like, with Perfect Dark was like that. I mean, might they, like, completely gut sections of the game unless you buy it at retail?
Yeah, that'd be kind of the slippery slope type stuff. Hopefully they don't. And if they do, hopefully there's repercussions where people just don't buy it then.
Well, people would... hackers would come in and, you know, take care of it. Hey, real quickly, how are you liking Forza 3?
It is the greatest driving game ever made.
So is it the virtual driving playground we've all been waiting for? According to Hitler?
It is. It is. It's just... such an amazing game to play. Like, I've been a big-time driving racing game fan pretty much ever since I've been playing games. And, you know, there's been a lot of them that have been very good over the years, like Forza 2, Forza, the Gran Turismos, whatever. But, I don't know, you play this game, and it's the whole experience. It's so streamlined. It's just one of those great experiences where everything's just done right in it. It's hard to explain otherwise, but there's, like, it really caters to all audiences. Like, you can just be, like, a casual person, come in and play it, and you don't have to be, like, some really good person at playing driving games to enjoy it, because they have all these assists you can turn on and off, so that the hardcore people are satisfied also.
Mm.
But they've had that before, but the thing that really sets it apart is that, like, the season mode is very well done. Like, it used to be... you'd just go into career mode, and oh, here are these few different types of races are unlocked at first, and you get to drive all these shitty cars for, like, the first few hours you have the game, and, you know, pick your poison, basically, and it's, I don't know, it's kind of, it was fine, but it definitely needed some help. And what they did now is you actually have a season, and so, like, in the first season, there's, like, this championship series, and there's three races in it, and every 2 weeks, one of those races happens. In the 2 weeks in between those races, you enter another series of events, which is based upon the vehicles you have in your garage, which is very cool. It's kind of like in Rock Band when you do like a mystery set list and it generates it based off of your DLC and everything else you have.
Mm.
It's more dynamic, basically. And so that stuff's really cool. When you go into a race and maybe your car is a little underpowered, it'll actually prompt you and say, you know, your car isn't really going to be competitive in this race. Do you want to upgrade it automatically? And you say yes, and then it'll go and figure out, like, the best upgrades to get your car up to the level to run in that race, and then tell you what the price is, and then you can decide to pay for it or not.
So it's like supersizing your car.
Yeah, but I mean, it's... Stuff like that's really cool, because it's like, I like going in and dinking around and upgrading the car, but there's a lot of times where you spend, like, a lot of time doing that and less time on the track. And in this game, you can really tell the focus is being in the car, being on the track, driving, which is what it should be in a driving game. And so they make a lot of things like that where it's like, here, hit a button, your car gets upgraded, and you move on. Or if you're somebody who's really into that, you can just go into the upgrade screens and, you know, pick your upgrades and do it exactly how you want, which is very, it's very, very well done. And like, one of the few quibbles I have with it is the cockpit view, which I'm so glad they put it in the game because it totally changes the experience. But they have you, like, pretty much sitting on top of the steering wheel, so you can barely see your rearview mirror or your side mirror. And then one other thing that's annoying is that when you shift, your guy does not reach down and shift. His hands just stay on the wheel the whole time. I mean, it's like a little dinky thing. And the fact that I'm picking on stuff like this tells you how good the game is.
Maybe he's got paddle shifters.
Yeah, but there's cars that you know don't have paddle shifters, and he doesn't do it. But the cool thing is, for the sitting on top of the steering wheel thing, there's actually kind of a hack you can do where you can use the multi-screen mode that Forza 3 has. And so even though you've only got like one screen you're playing on, you can go into multi-screen mode and then turn it on, and then the very bottom option, it's set to like 45 degrees by default, and you can... If you put it up to like 75 or 80 degrees, it basically makes your guy move back from the wheel, and all of a sudden, you know, like your mirror's there, and your side mirror's there, and it totally makes it awesome. So basically, at that point, my only beef with the game is the, you know, hand not reaching down to shift. Otherwise, it's basically a perfect racing game, and I think Gran Turismo 5 has its work cut out for it to top it.
If it ever comes out.
Yeah, if it ever comes out. Cause
I guess the one on the PlayStation Portable, I guess, was kind of a disappointment, because basically, like, there's no career.
There's no career in it, yeah.
And that was supposed to be a launch title for the PSP.
Yeah, and so it's like, been how many years?
4 years late.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell their deal is, and they, like, finally in Gran Turismo 5, they're going to have damage modeling and stuff for the first time ever. It's like, that shit has been in Forza since the very first game.
So that's going to be like 2 more years of development right there. Everyone should go onto YouTube on my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/BenHeck, then DOTCOM.com. Because we made a Hitler video where Hitler was complaining about the Gran Turismo 5 delay. And
yeah, and then he ends up caving and pre-orders Forza 3 and an Xbox.
Yep.
But yeah, it's... I don't know, it's just incredible to me. I can't remember exactly when the first Forza came out, but I know it was like within like a month or two of when Gran Turismo 4 came out. They were pretty close to the same time. And since then, Forza 2 and Forza 3 have both come out, and they've both been excellent driving games. It's like there's no excuse at all for Gran Turismo 5 to take as long as it is.
Was Gran Turismo 5, did it take longer than our Port Washington movie then?
I would think so, because, God, when did...
Is it 2004 or 2005?
God, I can't remember for sure. I'm trying to remember... I think 5.
So what's with them?
I think I was in the house when I got Forza, so yeah, I think it was 05.
They made the first, what was it, like 98, and the sequel was like... Was it a year later or 2 years later? It was pretty fast.
Pretty quick, yeah.
Then, like, the next one was 2001 on the PlayStation 2.
Yeah, the first three all came pretty fast.
And what the hell happened?
I don't know. They went up their own asses, I think.
They went out to make an Avatar'd.
Yeah, I would be shocked if it's comparable to Forza 3 when it comes out. I mean, I'd be very happy if it is, but I don't know. It's just... I don't know. there's something to be said for efficiency and not, you know, letting something spiral out of control. I think one of the problems with GT5 is that they're trying to put too much in it. Like, I saw the trailer, you know, and they flash, like, NASCAR up there, and they show, like, a NASCAR race going on, you know, which NASCAR is something that used to just get its own game. Now, apparently, it's going to be part of Gran Turismo, which... They must be trying to broaden their appeal or something, because, I mean, the majority of people who play Gran Turismo could give less than a shit about NASCAR. It's, like, two totally different types of racing. So, I don't know, but they've got that in there. There's, like, I think rally racing's in there. You know, they're trying to just put, like, goddamn everything into it. And
well, they've had long enough to do it.
Yeah. So it's probably going to be one of those things, you know, where they try to do everything and they end up not really doing anything well instead of just focusing on one thing and doing it really well. So,
okay.
We'll see, though. Review so, coming whenever the fuck the game comes out.
It's been 84 years. Shall we talk about, gosh, we don't have a whole lot of time here.
Oh, you know, sure we do.
I don't like making these, like, 8-hour podcasts like you
oh,
and Dale.
Who cares if we go over by, like, 10 minutes?
God cares.
Life will go on. Well, God's opinion doesn't matter here, so let's move on.
Jesus begins. All right.
Oh, and I beat Fallout 3, by the way.
Yay! Did you do all the side quests now with the DLC that you got for free?
No, I haven't done them all. I went through... I did Operation Anchorage pretty early on, because that helped me level up a lot, and I got some, like, kick-ass armor,
oh, like the Gauss rifle?
Armor and shit, yeah. And then I did Point Lookout. The only thing I have left to do there is go back and find every spot so I can get the achievement for that.
That's actually pretty easy. There are not that many locations in it.
Yeah, and I actually got the perk that lets you see every location on the map. And so they all show up in Point Lookout. So basically I just have to walk around all of them and discover them or whatever. But yeah, I haven't done any of the other packs yet, and there's still like a bunch of side quests left to do in the main game. I'm at like 43 or 44 hours, I think.
Well, in past podcasts, you weren't so enthusiastic about Fallout. Has your opinion changed?
Yes, I would say so. It's I don't know. I think the thing about it, like, I will admit, I think it's better than Oblivion now. I think the thing that makes it better is that you can relate to the world. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's a post-apocalyptic world and everything, but it's Washington, D.C. It's something you've seen. It's someplace a lot of us have been to, you know, whatever. It just makes a big difference, I think, compared to, you know, being in this fantasy world. Because, like, for me, I remember, like, one of the coolest moments, you know, I've had in gaming in a long time was when I came out of the tunnels, walked up the steps, and there's the Capitol building in front of me, and then I turn around, and there's the Washington Monument, you know, kind of tattered and everything, but it's, like, looming over you, and it was just, like, kind of one of those moments that just kind of gives you the chills. It was, like, really cool, and that wouldn't happen in, like, a place that doesn't really exist in a game, I think. And so I think that's something that really aids it a lot. Kind of like, you know, when we talk about the Call of Duties and stuff, and I talk about how I like, you know, the World War II setting better than the modern setting. It's like, those World War II battles, they really happened. It adds weight to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, the modern warfare stuff, it's just some generic horse shit that they've made up, you know, and that's
fine.
Oh, but
I think the Capitol building gets blown up in that, though, according to the box art.
Well, good.
It's like on fire.
What is it, a Roland Emmerich film?
Oh, God. I can't believe you and anyone else thinks 2012 is going to be any good. It's going to be terrible.
Well, I don't know if it'll be good, but goddamn, I want to see it.
Well, all right. It comes out in a couple weeks. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. When I was in D.C., first time I was in D.C., it was long ago, so last time I was in D.C., it was like while I was playing Fallout, and the Washington Mall, in reality, is actually a lot wider than it is in the game,
okay.
But still, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Like, it's probably like twice. It's like maybe a block across in the game. It's probably more like three blocks across in reality, and it's kind of actually on a hill. Of course, you know, in the game, all that's been blown out, and there's all those, like, trenches and shit.
Yeah.
So. But still, it's... Well, hell, like I said, when I went to MAGFest, we got kind of lost downtown, and I'm like, I think I basically know which way we need to go since I was playing so much Fallout at the time, and we got out of there.
Yeah.
Then the Super Mutant showed up.
Oh, no.
And he was like, "Something troubling you, my friend?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm lost." "Well, take this stim pack and some sugar bombs." What I like about that game is it's got vacuum tube-powered robots talking about communism and shit. I mean, how could I not love that?
Yeah, the end of the game is awesome, where he's just like, what is it? Death is a preferable alternative to communism and stuff like that.
Embrace democracy or be destroyed.
Yeah.
And then he's like, "I'm George Bush."
And then he's like, "Democracy is truth. Communism is death." Yeah, that end sequence, I mean, it was like kind of anticlimactic, but it was like cool still. You know, like walking across behind that dude and he's like blowing everything away. And
yeah, because you really don't have to do anything.
No, you just basically follow him there and blow a couple people away when you go into the memorial and that's it. But I think like the choices you get in the game are like really cool too. Like pretty much anybody you interact with, you have like a choice that you can make. You know, like you can either you could be, like, civil with them, you know, or you could be, like, a prick to them, or you can kill them. You know, you've got, like, all these options, and there's some, like, parts in it where, like, the decisions are kind of tough, actually, too.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, Mass Effect had that a little bit, too, which was kind of neat in a game. You know, like, you get enough of a connection to, like, some of the characters in the game that, you know, there's a lot of weight to your choices and how you
decide. Yeah, and you actually, like, kind of feel bad about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was gonna. I don't think you played it through, but the Pit downloadable thing.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet.
Something like the people. Well, the Pit is Pittsburgh, and it's like they're all slaves being made to like make things.
Okay.
And but that one's kind of interesting because like the people that are running the slaves are like, "Oh, we're trying to rebuild this world or whatever." So you can actually kind of see their point of view.
See their point, yeah.
But then something like the leader's wife has a baby, and it's something like the slaves have some sort of disease, and they want you to kidnap the baby because it could cure their disease.
Yeah.
Or you can take the baby, or you cannot kidnap the baby. Like, that's the choice.
Okay. And
it's like, what do I do?
Yeah.
So I actually sided with the slavers on that one. I'm like, I'm not going to kidnap a baby.
Well, it was like the Point Lookout stuff had that kind of too with that ghoul guy and then like the brain guy or whatever,
oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, they're both basically pricks, you know? And it's like, well, which prick do I want to side with here, you know? And there's some kind of interesting choices to that, because, you know, like, the one's kind of offering you power, and the other one's offering, like, power and knowledge, the other one's offering you, like, wealth.
I did a save to try both methods, and if you side with the brain, he tries to kill you anyway. So
does he? Okay.
You might as well just go with the ghoul and kill the brain.
That's what I did. It was kind of funny when you blow the thing away, and I wound up going down below where he falls, and sure enough, the little brain was, like, laying there.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, it's like Krang from Turtles.
It is kind of funny, like, all the ghouls are the same voice. They basically all sound like Hank Azaria.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
But that's all right.
And some of those vaults are goddamn creepy.
Like the haunted vault?
Like the clone one, where the guys keep coming up and they're like, "Gary."
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gary.
Well, if you hack all the terminals in the vaults, you can kind of see the vault's backstories. And
yeah,
basically
checking that out.
Like, each vault was basically used for, like, different sadistic experiments.
Things.
Like, one, like, they, like, let everything run out, but the only thing they had enough of was weapons, for instance.
Yeah.
And then the cloning one, and...
Yeah, I noticed that they were all kind of experimental, and there was the one where they were, like, creating, like, mutants and shit in it or whatever, and...
Right.
All sorts of goofy crap going on.
And again, you could, like, read books and stuff in Oblivion, but a lot of it was just bullshit. It really didn't mean anything. You know, or like you like read the tale of the portly woman or some shit, said stuff like that in Oblivion. It's kind of interesting they had all that in there, but
yeah.
It didn't really relate to the story that much. But in Fallout, again, if you actually read everything, you know, it tells you a lot about the story.
Piece stuff together,
you know?
Yeah.
It's a great game.
It's a neat game, definitely. It's pretty cool.
Well, shall we briefly talk about what was it, console versus PC online?
Oh, yeah, I suppose we should do this since Modern Warfare 2 is coming out, like, in a couple weeks.
Probably before our next podcast.
Yes.
Well, the big stink is the PC version will not have dedicated servers.
Yes.
Now, for myself, a game like that, I would certainly buy it on the PC.
Yeah.
However, that is enough to make me at least wait to hear about it. I mean, I'm not going to buy it day one.
Yeah.
And I know... I've done some stuff for Activision, and the first one of those controller monitors I did was actually for Modern Warfare, but still, I'm going to wait.
Yeah.
Because I don't want it for Xbox, because thumbsticks are... Ugh. But it seems like, from what I noticed with the clan people, the video game clans...
C-Lan.
God. It's so dumb that, you know, you still feel bad about saying something like that, but I don't know. C-Lan, yes. Clan of the Sea. Anyway, they talk about, like, they think every game on Xbox Live is hosted on an Xbox or something, and they think it's completely filled with, like, racist, profane 13-year-olds, and it's not that bad.
No.
If anything, kids like to sing into the microphone for some reason. I don't know why.
Which you then mute them, but...
Yeah. I just... Well, I mean, granted, I think it is kind of weak that there isn't dedicated servers, but I think whatever solution Infinity Ward comes up with will probably be all right, and all these clans... will cave. And they'll be like, oh, well, that's okay. You know, if we can host games on their servers or rent from them, then that's fine. They'll all cave.
Oh, yeah. Sure they will. Because that's the thing. At the end of the day, you know, money talks and bullshit walks.
Yep.
And all these people, you know, they're going to talk big right now. They're going to be like, yeah, I'm going to go get Bad Company 2 or whatever. And maybe they'll like that for a little while. But then they'll be like, yeah, this just isn't that great. And then they'll be like, oh, well, maybe Call of Duty's not so bad. And they'll go and buy it.
Actually, I didn't buy
Call of Duty.
I didn't buy Part 4 on release date either, so I guess it's...
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Actually, if you buy it, I don't know if it's on Xbox or all versions, but it actually comes with like a remastered version of Call of Duty 1.
Really?
Which was actually my favorite. That was actually the coolest one, I thought.
That's pretty cool.
That was an awesome game. Well, they're all good, but I really liked that one. What was I going to say before that? Shit.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, because, like, the first one hasn't been on the consoles before.
Nope. Oh, okay, like Avatar. Like, I'm not expecting it to be all that great, but I'm going to go see it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not expecting it to be all that great, you're going to go see it.
Yeah.
Dale says he's not going to see it.
He'll see it.
But he will.
Yep.
So, we're saying that's kind of the difference.
We're realists.
We're admitting that we'll go see it no matter what.
Yeah.
And, like... I'll probably pick up Modern Warfare 2 at some point. You know, if I'm not, like, waiting for it to be used or cheap, I just want to hear how the online works. The bar graph for a ping, though, I don't like that. Because it's like, ooh, this number is so complicated. What's 23 mean? What's 50 mean? I'm confused. Give me a bar graph. That means so much more.
I don't know. To me, you can just, like, look at the screen with a glance, see it's all green. It's like, okay, cool. We're going to be good. Oh. I mean, granted, you can probably do the same thing with the numbers, but then it's like, what the fuck's the difference? They both accomplish the same thing.
But the number tells you what it is. It's not the developer's interpretation of the number.
Who gives a shit?
Give a shit.
The developer interpreted everything in the goddamn game, so...
Actually, the charter internet, it's not like I'm Mike, you know? The pings around here are fine, so it doesn't really matter regardless.
Yeah.
This stuff is $35 a jar.
Jesus.
It smells good, though.
What is it?
It's silver conductive ink.
Oh.
I had to get more of it for that PlayStation thing. Oh.
So the big thing, though, is that basically they're going to have, like, matchmaking on the PC.
Mm-hmm.
There's not going to be lobbies or anything. It's just purely matchmaking, or what's the skinny on that?
It was basically someone said a few things in a podcast, and then since then there really hasn't been any statements.
Hmm.
Or the other alternative is Infinity Ward will patch it somehow and make the clans happy. So, all these clans are saying, I'm not siding with either side, I'm just saying this is probably what will happen.
Well, and you know what's going to happen is it's like, Activision's going to sit there, they're going to see what the returns are like for their sales, you know, and then after a few weeks, if they see that PC sales are down compared to what their expectations were or what... you know, Modern Warfare 1 sold, then maybe they'll look at something. If the sales are the same or better, they'll be like, fuck them.
I mean, they might still make some tweaks. Seems like there's a lot of... Well, but, of course, if they actually don't buy it. Well, and some people might say, oh, this will kill PC gaming. It's like, you know, if there's like 11 million World of Warcraft players, I probably would disagree with that.
Yeah. I think the realization that needs to happen, though, is like from the PC gaming world is that... you know, they're not kingfish anymore. You know, it's like console gaming has usurped it. And, you know, Infinity Ward, Activision, they're going to sell a hell of a lot more copies of that game on the PS3 and 360 than they will on the PC. That's just cold hard facts. I mean, combined sales will easily And the 360 alone will top PC sales.
Of course, when you make an Xbox 360 game, it's not too difficult to make a PC version out of it. Basically, you get the PC version for free. It's like...
Yeah. But, I mean, I think that's the thing. It's like, not that long ago, you know, these types of games were pretty much only really possible on the PC.
Well, that's because the difference between the PC and the computer was night and day, but now...
You mean the console?
Yeah, I'm sorry, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I'm getting at, is it's like, you know, 5 years ago...
Like when the first Call of Duty came out, I mean, that wouldn't have run on a PS2 or an Xbox. Maybe an Xbox, but...
But it wouldn't have been, like, comparable in quality or anything.
Right, but now they can actually make parody games. Of course, the thing that I would say is most modern computers are far beyond the new consoles. I mean, think about it. Like,
sure.
Xbox, PlayStation both have 512 megs of RAM and blah, blah, blah. And, but they basically have 1995-era graphics, and, like, it is much easier. I mean, they could make more advanced games for PC. They just don't.
Yeah.
Of course, like Battlefield 3, I think that's probably just going to be a PC game that'll probably be quite advanced.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think that's the thing, is that line has been greatly... Or that chasm between PC and consoles is shrunk dramatically.
Right, but now it's kind of artificially held back. So now the PC games are like gimped; they match the console games. I kind of have an issue with that.
Yeah.
Of course, that's elitism again.
Yeah. It's like, well, but you know what? If there were more PC gamers and the things sold more on PC, then there'd probably be a difference. But if I'm a developer,
there's a lot of PCs out there.
They don't sell more than the consoles do. They just don't.
Are you trying to say there's more consoles than computers?
No. What I'm trying to say is that this game in particular, or pretty much any of these other games where they're available on both, I'll bet you dollars to donuts the consoles sell more units than the PC does.
Probably.
You know, that's my point. It's like it used to be, you know, these games wouldn't even run on a console, so the PC pretty much, you know, they were the only game in town. That ain't the case anymore, and that's what PC gamers need to realize.
That's how Mike got started on... I was over his place one day, and he's playing, like, Medal of Honor on the PlayStation 2, and I'm like, dude, let me show you the real version of it. And I showed him Allied Assault, which is one of Infinity Ward's early games, and he's like, wow, this is so much better! Because, yeah, I mean, back then it wasn't even close.
Yeah, it wasn't close, but now it's close, you know, so it's, you know, I mean, anymore the thing people on the PC hold up as their rallying cry is the mouse and keyboard. I mean, that's like what they have left.
Mouse and keyboard, free online is fairly relevant, because Xbox is cheap enough that it's really...
Yeah.
Resolution, I mean, PC can go way beyond what the consoles can do.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's kind of gotten to the point where you're talking... It's kind of like when you're looking at DVDs and Blu-rays with people. It's gotten to that point. You know, if you have a nice upscaling machine like a PS3, and then you got a Blu-ray, most people are going to be like, the DVD upscaled is fine. It does exactly what I need.
Oh,
you know,
I think,
that's like the difference you're talking about there, I think.
I think most modern DVDs look very, very good upscaled. I mean...
Yeah.
You don't really notice their DVD. I mean, they don't look as good as a Blu-ray, but it's like Mad Men, for instance. That looks really good on this DVD. I don't know why that one in particular. Excuse me.
But I think it's like the same thing with, you know, the, you know, World at War on the 360 compared to the PC. It's like, it may look a bit better on the PC, but the 360 still looks really good.
I would say it looks a little bit better than a little bit better. It's a big difference.
I don't know. I've seen it, and it looks fine, but I think it looks perfectly fine on the 360. I'm not going to say the 360 looks as good.
Of course, this screen is smaller in a high resolution, so it's got
that makes
two
a big
things
difference.
Going for it. But I would rather play it on a 24-inch screen at stupidly high resolutions than at 1280 by 720 on my big TV.
Well, you're also sitting like a foot and a half away from it, too.
That's true. I should show you Call of Duty on this. I mean, it looks way better than the console version, because...
I mean, if I were sitting a foot and a half away from my TV, that wouldn't be very fun.
Well, remember when I borrowed World at War from you, because I was testing that mouse controller thing?
Yeah.
I put it on my Xbox, I'm like, oh man, this looks like shit! Because I'd been playing on my PC for like 6 months, so...
Yeah.
So anyway, I guess the point is,
Wait and see.
The PC people are kind of snobs. And we'll kind of see if they put their money where their mouths aren't.
Yeah, I'm betting they won't.
They'll cave.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's not like I'm saying that they should. I think they realize it's probably not an atom bomb that they think it is.
Yeah.
Matchmaking does suck, but...
See, I think... The thing is, I think matchmaking's cool, but they should offer options. They should have lobbies, and they should also have matchmaking. You can do, like, either.
Yeah. If you really need your handheld... The thing is, so many Xbox games, you can't join mid-game. It takes forever.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, shit, like, when we played Halo 3 a lot back in the day, I thought the matchmaking was perfectly fine in that. I liked it.
It was still slower than... Well, of course, yeah, refreshing the server list takes a while, too.
Yeah.
Of course, once you refresh the server list, you don't really have to refresh it again for, like, at least the next time you play.
Hmm. But, so. I mean, it's, you know, there's different things, and I think, you know, if I were a company, I would try to cater to the largest audience possible, which means offering both. You know, I mean, why not? What's it going to hurt?
So you're saying PC guys like me are acting like Mac users.
I wouldn't go that far.
I bet you more than 10% of the Call of Duty Modern Warfare sales would be for PC, so more than Mac users.
Yeah, yeah, there will definitely be more than 10%, but, I mean, yeah, the PC gamers have some valid points, but, you know, I think a lot of the time they're very elitist.
Or like someone like Mike, like he doesn't have a fucking clue how online works in the console.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of them are like that, so I'm just thinking, you know, they don't have all the information.
Yeah.
I think... A lot of the points are valid, but I think a lot of times they're jumping to conclusions, Matt.
Yes. Well, and like I mentioned to you in that email today, too, it's kind of interesting. There's a similar thing going on right now with Forza 3 on the 360, where I never play the online in it because racing games are kind of iffy online, because usually you just have jack-offs that go around crashing into people. But apparently in Forza 2, it had this lobby system. It was great. People loved it. And in Forza 3, now it's all matchmaking, and people are up in arms, pissed off. There's quite a few people, apparently, that have actually been going back and just playing Forza 2 online, like when they want to play online. But so there's a lot of calls on there, you know, like on the forums and things, you know, for them to implement, like, the lobby system and all that, which I'm sure they could patch that in somehow if they wanted to. I guess we'll see how much of a furor there is over it and whatnot, but I thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, there's this whole, you know, snafu about Modern Warfare 2, which, I mean, obviously it's a game that's going to sell more than Forza 3, but Forza 3 is another, like, A game out there, and it's only on the console, but it's having kind of a similar uproar around
well,
it.
Well, like the PC, if you have something and then you take it away, people are going to get mad.
Yeah. That's it just doesn't make sense to... remove that, I guess, you know.
Or why not have both? Yeah, like you said, like, why not have matchmaking if you need help?
Yeah.
And just going to lobbies otherwise. Because matchmaking is so slow. I mean, yeah. I played Uncharted a couple times, and you spend almost as much time matchmaking as you do in the round.
It's, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd agree. It's not the quickest thing in the world, but it is what it is. But yeah, I think they should... you know, offer both. That would make the most sense. Not to be democratic or anything, but it seems like the smart thing to do.
Right. Well, so, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm sure the sales will be through the roof on it, though, and all that. So they have an enormous banner at Best Buy for it that you can, like, see from
a mile away.
But,
well, I like playing new games because, like, if I go on to, like, Call of Duty 4, now I get my ass
kicked.
Just get
raped, yeah.
Because there's people that, they'll buy that game and that's all they'll play until, like, the next one comes out. And
yeah.
I don't... Well, I'm pretty good at World of War, but again, going to Call of Duty 5 or 6 or whatever it is now, and
yeah.
Everyone's, like, equal again. Everyone's equally lame.
That's true.
So you actually have an advantage.
Yeah, because that was my problem with World at War on the 360. I got it, like, not too long after it came out, like a month or so, and I... got whooped a bit early, but then I got kind of good. But then, yeah, I went away from it for, like, 3 or 4 months, came back, and just got annihilated. Like, everybody had turned into snipers and were just camping and shit. And
like, I played Call of Duty 4 quite a bit when it came out, but now if I play it... But then I haven't really played it, like, probably in at least a year.
Yeah.
So now if I play it, I just get raped.
In some ways, I kind of envy people that can just get one game and, like, play it for a year. Because it's much cheaper.
Yeah.
But I just can't do that. It's like,
no.
You know, like, a game like Fallout 3, it's, like, really good. I just dive in. I can't stop playing it. You know, and then after a month, I'll be done with it. You know, and I probably won't go back to it again. You know, and it's like, yeah, I probably should try to, you know, extend that out a bit, which I guess Forza's helping with right now. But,
of course, you know, you have these games that are like, you know, let's face it, Call of Duty is an online game, and there's a single-player game there as a bonus.
Yeah, and but, I guess for me, too, like, multiplayer is not a big selling point for a game either, so it's not something I do a lot.
Well, Call of Duty World of War or Modern Warfare 2 is kind of like Halo 3. As soon as it comes out, everyone's going to be playing it. Like, you just watch,
definitely.
Like, pretty much everyone on your friends list on the Xbox will be playing that the day it comes out.
Well, that's how it's been the last 2 years, like, when Modern Warfare came out, and then, like, World at War last year, there were probably, like, half the people were playing that, you know, and...
Oh, that new Grand Theft Auto thing came out, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, Gay Tony, the Ballad of Gay Tony. It was interesting. I was at Best Buy.
Is it supposed to be good?
I think, yeah, they gave it, like, a 9.5 on GameSpot.
Lost in Damage was pretty good. It was, like, the length of a normal game, too.
Well, that's what they said in the review on GameSpot. They basically said that it would be a great game at a... and a great deal even at three times its price. So basically, if it were just, you know, a $60 retail game on its own, they're saying it's good enough, which I know you said you put like 15 hours
into. Yeah, Lost in Damned took me longer than Uncharted 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should get that. Why not? $20.
It was interesting, too, when I was at Best Buy yesterday, I was just wandering through the game section. They actually have
a disc?
Version. They have a disc that has Lost and Damned and Ballad of Gay Tony on
it. Oh, Liberty City Stories?
Yeah, and you don't need to have Grand Theft Auto 4 to play it.
Oh, so it's just those parts?
Just those two parts.
Which how I much was it?
I think it was $40. I think it was just, you know, because they're $20 a piece, DLC. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
So it's a standalone game.
Yeah, they said, like, it boldly, you know, had does not require Grand Theft Auto 4 to play. And,
oh, that's cool.
Which was kind of neat. So,
well, Rockstar knows what they're doing, apparently.
Yeah. Don't screw around.
So apparently this is the last episode, then? There's no more?
I think so. I thought I heard they were just doing the two. And then maybe... Well, aren't they already working on the next Grand Theft Auto?
I'm sure they are.
And, God, I thought I heard that's supposed to get released... It's either next year or early the following year. Like, it's pretty quick, considering how long it took them between these last two.
Well, they're probably doing it on the same engine.
Yeah, which makes a big difference, so... So that's kind of interesting, but we'll see.
Yeah, wasn't there some sort of sneak... There's some sort of, like, sneak peek or some sort of clue for it in a manual. I can't remember what that was. I think if you buy the Liberty City Stories, there's some sort of clue.
To like where it's going to be set.
Yeah. Seems like people are thinking Minnesota.
That'd be interesting. Could be like redneck Grand Theft Auto.
Because everything else has been like on the coast, right?
Yeah. Shit, I'd probably buy that if they set it in the Midwest.
Redneck Grand Theft Auto. What, you a tractor? Wait, you could do that in San Andreas. That'd be funny.
Yeah, be kind of interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
When I was at Miami, I was thinking about all the good times with Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
Yeah.
Great game.
That is a good time. Still the best one.
Yeah, I wish they would kind of get back to the arcadey feel. Like, ooh, I drove over this icon, now I have one less wanted star. I wish they'd get back to that. That's more fun.
Oh, yeah.
Let's be honest.
Just... That game was, like, really over the top, where, like, 4 is, like, way too, like, real and gritty, you know? It's like Vice City. It's just like, yeah, this is Scarface, basically, and everything's pastel-colored, because obviously Miami Vice was, you know, what the 80s were. And they just went with it, and the music was great, and, you know, it just it's definitely one of the great games of all time.
Did they tweak more stuff in the... God, I keep wanting to say Big Gay Al. The Ballad of Gay
Ballad
Tony.
Of Gay Tony. Yeah, I know, I always want to say Big Gay Tony or something like that.
Well, Big Gay Al was a guy on
South Park.
I know they fixed some stuff in the Lost and the Dam. Like, they made, obviously, since the game is based off motorcycles, they made the motorcycles handle better.
Yeah.
Because that was another thing, Grand Theft Auto 4, they made the vehicles handle too realistically, and it wasn't fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it was less fun.
I know, like, with this one, too, the story is supposed to be quite different from, you know, 4 and Lost in the Damned, because you're kind of going into the upper echelons of society in Liberty City.
Mm-hmm.
So you're, like, dealing with all the high rollers, and so it's going to be, like, kind of a lot different thematically and
so
things, I guess. You're, like, a henchman
for Gay Tony,
yeah. And I'm not sure, you know, what all goes on behind that, but... sounded kind of interesting.
Yeah, I should download that.
Yeah, you might as well. I'm sure it'll be at least another 15 hours of gameplay for
$20. Yeah, like I said, I was pleasantly surprised. Well, I wasn't really surprised, but I mean, yeah, you certainly get your time out of Lost and Damned. I mean,
yeah.
Think about it, it's like 13 hours, which is like the length of longer
than
most games.
More than a lot of retail games, yeah.
And like you think about like the average Fallout $10 expansion, like you don't get,
no.
Even if you think about half the price, you don't get 6 hours out of that.
No.
So yeah, it's quite the deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been thinking I should check that game out at some point, but because I know
can borrow
you've
mine
got
if
it.
You want.
I've got enough other shit to play right now, but at
I'll
some
tell you
point,
what, I'll get the Gay Tony thing and beat it. Then you can borrow my copy.
Yes, that'll work.
Cool. Well, I think we've said enough.
Yes.
Oh, Netflix coming to PS3. Well, you know what? Why don't we save that for a podcast when it's actually out?
Yes, maybe we can actually talk about how it compares and whatnot to the 360.
All right. Well, we'll see you all next time on the BenHack.com podcast.